everybody. Welcome to Radio Radar, episode 108, the regular weekly podcast from GamesRadar.com, the bestest website on the internet. I'm the host, Henry Gilbert, and I'm here with...
Lucas Sullivan.
Anthony Snyder.
Jan Jones.
And Ashley Reed.
We got a five-person crew here.
Well, it's been a while since I've been.
It's been a while.
Also, when are we going to...
I can never not hear "it's been a while" and not want to sing. It's been a while.
When are we going to find episode 100?
I don't know. We keep looking. I think it's with
digging.
The Triforce.
I'm waiting for people to forget
about
the Tetraforce.
You'll never find it.
It is the Tetraforce.
You want to just gloss
but
over it.
But as the search continues, we've also had a real busy week. Big reviews, both by Lucas Sullivan,
yes.
And we're going to talk a lot about
those. I don't know how that happened.
Yay.
Just timing.
Actually,
more than just Lucas. There were a couple other big reviews, but... there was some Smash Brothers, or I just want to talk about Smash Brothers all the time, but there was non-Smash Brothers news this week, too. But before we get into all that, let's do the top seven of this week. Is there a top seven song?
Yep.
Do we have a top
Here
seven?
Here it goes.
Top seven song.
Top seven.
There we go.
All right, this week was the top seven brutalist boxers.
Baddest boxers.
Baddest.
And it is bad like Michael Jackson's bad, is what I told someone in the comments, because he just wasn't getting it.
To hear bad, is bad means good.
Yes.
Toughest. I messed up the whole Simpsons quote. Homer says, like, oh, Marge, kids today, bad means good. And to shake one, forget it.
I tried.
Boxers, written by Mr. Sam Riley of our UK group.
Mm-hmm.
He did a good, fine job with it. And so let's start this pugilism. What? You're pointing.
I'm waiting.
Oh, let's start this pugilistic list with number seven.
Number seven.
Heavy D from King of Fighters. Now, this is not to be confused with Heavy D from the Fat Boys, right?
Which I wasn't even aware of as a rap group until this joke was made.
He was okay.
Oh, now that we found love.
Look,
I'm not going to say he was okay because we're probably going to get attacked. He did his thing.
Well, like, the Fat Boys were a joke group. Like, they weren't. They starred in terrible comedies and, like, covered Chubby Checker songs. Like, that was what they did. Like, and then. Two of them are dead now, right? I think.
Even Heavy D's gone.
Yeah, Heavy D.
Yeah.
Well, he was the heaviest of them. But this isn't who we're talking about. It's turned into a whole thing about the Fat Boys, but it really wasn't. So, Lucas, you're a fighting game guy. Tell me about Heavy D, because I actually don't know anything about it.
So, the funniest part to me is that Heavy D is part of a team of three. So, in King of Fighters, it's all teams of three.
Yep.
And they all have themes going. And this Heavy D hails from the... I guess American like sports team of him who's a boxer. There's a football player and a basketball player, all of whom, you know, they don't really have a place in the King of Fighters tournament. But Heavy D is, you know, he's a boxer. He's got a cool hairstyle.
Yeah, it's fun to me in, you know, the fighting games that stereotype every ethnicity to then see, like, no, this is the American stereotype. You all play basketball or football or whatever,
or
American sports.
Like, yeah.
But is he a tough boxer?
I don't know much about his character.
It looks like he has style.
I think he's
glasses.
I think his moves are kind of cool.
All right, number six.
Number six.
TJ Combo of Killer Instinct.
Yeah, so this guy, he was an awesome boxer. This could be a situation we've run into in the next 20 years. He was an awesome boxer. He started to get worse, so he got cybernetic implants in his arms.
That's
and
right.
People
like
are
you
like,
do.
You're a cheater.
So
screw
he's
you.
Basically Jax, except boxing gloves.
Except you can't see that his arms are metal. So he was shamed, but he entered... He wanted to take down Ultra Tech. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I think so.
He wanted to take him down, win back the people, and then he's coming back in the Xbox One Killer Instinct.
Did you know it was called Ultra Tech as a reference to the Ultra 64, the original name for the N64, which was the hardware that Killer Instinct worked off of?
No, I did not
know that. Oh, snap.
So Killer Instinct and Cruisin' USA were both made to be the test bed for... N64, they're like, oh, these arcade machines are N64s, even though really they are not. Like, N64 was way more powerful than what those were on, but they were both supposed to be what the Ultra 64, as it was originally called.
Huh. Mario 128.
That's why there's a bunch of Ultra references in Cruisin' USA as well. But then they made an even bigger deal when Killer Instinct made it to Super NES, because you're like, this is a next-gen game on my regular system. I don't need a PlayStation at all. Which isn't true. But TJ Combo's cool. Now he's in the Xbox One version.
Yep.
I think the season
he looks more
two
like
that,
an MMA fighter
than
a boxer. Season
2 just started, right? Well, that's what's cool now. MMA is the cool thing now. Boxing's not
Maya
cool.
is also back. The
Boxing's
Amazon
pretty
war.
Cool.
It's
or gets the bomb.
I hate when it always comes down to judges. Like, I don't know. Like, and also, Floyd Mayweather is such a dick, man.
Totally.
I mean, that's why you pay to watch him hopefully get beat up, and then he never gets beat up. He just wins every time. Undefeated, still
but,
undefeated.
But if you think about it, that's how you get people to
exactly.
get people to pay more.
Otherwise, it's just like Vladimir Klitschko is just like
I
boring.
Do like the Klitschkos, and then there's what's his face out of Mexico, the redhead. He's really interesting to watch. He's a good boxer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like Manny. Well, he's getting up in years.
Yeah. I like Hajime no Ippo. If you've ever seen that anime.
Oh, that's good. That's a good one. Do you think Pacquiao is going to get cybernetic implants?
Yeah, he's got the money for it. I just don't know if the Catholic Church would approve of it. He kind of does whatever he says.
Half man, that's half machine.
We're getting really jocular in this episode.
All
right, that's not the right word. Use of the word jocular. I know that. Number five. Rue. Now, this is from Streets of Rage 3. So here's somebody who couldn't even compete in boxing. Well, I guess much like TJ Combo could not.
He's a kangaroo.
I think you'd have to call it animal abuse. Like they would shut that tournament down, even if he was the one doing the abusing.
Though kangaroos boxing is a time-honored tradition in like cartoons and fiction.
Well, I didn't. That's probably like an actual emblem in Australia of like they have a flag that has a boxing kangaroo.
Really?
On it. So they don't mess around when it comes to boxing games.
Did you guys, when you attended when you guys attended the California Extreme, did you play the game Kangaroo? The Donkey Kong knockoff that
no.
is
no,
pretty much
I didn't
lost
even
the
see
time.
That.
It's really good, and it's one of the very few games where you play as a mother. Like, you play because you're a kangaroo who's after her Joey that got kidnapped. It's basically just Donkey Kong except replace Donkey Kong with an evil trapper who steals your baby.
Want to know more games. That should be a top seven for the future. Top seven games where you play as a mother.
That I highly doubt there are seven. but
get us some Kill Bill
anyway,
games.
I wasn't the biggest fan of Rue because I felt he replaced Max, him and the stupid wizard. The
well, he's a
wizard.
Secret
Did you like Max, though?
I loved Max. He was a pro wrestler. I loved playing as Max.
He was a straight-up rock.
My brother could have skates all he wanted. I was playing as Max.
I hate his skate, too. Oh, he's picked Blaze.
I like Blaze, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, Axel? Don't like Axel.
Axel's okay, but he's slow. He's really powerful, but he's slow.
While Blaze is acrobatic.
Blaze is like the medium.
And Rue, he barely even punches with his fists, right?
He's no, like, he just uses like his feet all the time.
No, he has
and
boxing.
His tail.
And he
does
a hurricane
his tail?
Kick. He uses a hurricane kick, too.
All right, fine. You know that kangaroos use their tails for balance.
We did have kangaroo jerky last week.
Sure Whoa. Did.
We did.
That's right.
Yeah.
You weren't here for that.
You weren't. Lily walked around. She had gotten
Oh, no, I remember that. I remember that.
We ate Rue's cousin. It was gross.
Fractal.
Delicious.
Number four.
That seems redundant. It's really redundant.
Moving from a kangaroo to a fox. Steve
He's
Fox.
Not a real fox.
From the Tekken series.
Yes, he is. I learned more about his background than I ever hoped to.
As I've learned, Tekken has a very stupid, complicated background.
Ow! Like, for instance.
Well, this is why I've pitched.
I mean, it's true.
This is why
Sorry.
I pitched
yeah,
multiple
features.
Yeah,
we've got a Tekken expert in the house.
I've pitched multiple features that have been judged as too niche to do, and then it's true. But it was about the most stupidly complex storylines in fighting games, which are unnecessary in every fighting game. That's so Tekken, yeah. What's
so
Steve
Fox?
Fox
is a clone, okay. right? Or he was developed in a lab.
No, he was. He's actually
he's related
Nina's,
to Jin.
He's Nina's son.
Yeah,
and she was locked away in some sort
While
of cryogenic.
While she was in cryo freezing, they then artificially
inseminated
her.
Exactly,
like you do.
And
so much artificial.
So she knows that's her son. But
second week in a row,
we
talked about
mom.
Artificial insemination.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Oh, interesting God. Episode this week.
But I really like Steve Fox's animations because mm-hmm. it's really cool to see. He has, like, he can bob and sway out of the way of incoming hits. Mm-hmm. And if you're really good with him, then you can just sort of, like, literally dance around the other person as you're mm-hmm. punching them.
Yeah.
And see, he's from the British pugilist.
Yeah, his accent's good.
Too. Yeah, I do like that. It gives Tekken its international flair, stuff like that.
I like his bright yellow boxing.
Also, that's another thing about why Tekken is so convoluted, that they had the neat idea to do like a time skip, but then they also didn't want to lose all their characters. So like a dozen different characters have different, very complicated explanations like, well, they should be 30 years older, but they're not because they were frozen or because they were cloned or
this is
because this guy is king number two and he just put on a different mask.
I just want to say the tag tournaments don't count towards the storyline.
All right.
Not canon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're non-canon.
Not uh-huh. canon.
Number three.
Number three.
Afro Thunder from the Ready to Rumble series.
This is a series that I feel like is underappreciated because I had a good time playing Ready to Rumble.
I played the crap out of it yeah. on the Dreamcast. Well,
I love the training aspect of it where mm-hmm. you could go to the gym and like lift weights and that would make you stronger in the next
yeah.
the next fight.
I felt the Australian character was super broken. Like he was an in my house he was off limits. But meanwhile Afro Thunder maybe seems like a character that wouldn't get created today, I feel.
It's not maybe, of a modern
maybe
mindset.
Not.
Well, he's a bit stereotypical.
Yeah,
just a bit.
I mean, he's a reference to 70s blaxploitation films. Like, he's not just... I don't think they created him to say, like, oh, black people are like this in real life, which, like, no, it's not...
That whole game is everybody's a bunch of stereotypes.
Everybody's a stereotype, so... It's like, you know.
It's literally caricatures.
Though, however, boxing. I would have picked from Ready to Rumble. Like, Afro Thunder may be the most famous, but Ready to Rumble has Michael Buffer is actually his own fighting guy.
What?
And he's the boss. At least in the second one, he's the boss.
Did he ever throw out his voice from doing that all the time?
He makes so... He looks like... Isn't like $1 million every time he says
it?
Oh,
so. Yeah.
Why?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's like a guy standing by with $1 million money bags and he just goes... Because
he copyrighted the phrase, quote, "Let's get ready to rumble," unquote.
Can't anyone think of something better and just, you know,
hell
be
yeah.
the new guy?
Henry, you know,
it's
owe
also,
him $1 million.
It's a prestige thing, though. I mean, because I've seen boxing matches that don't have Michael Buffer, and you feel totally gypped. You know, you're getting a second-rate match when Michael Buffer
Michael
isn't
Buffer
there.
Didn't show
you know
up.
You're getting some scrubs, and it's just like...
Scrub nose.
C-list boxing.
I want no scrub.
However, I prefer his brother, actually. Bruce Buffer of UFC. Like, it's time! Like, that's
he's trying to keep it in the family.
Yeah. I prefer that.
Have you seen the dude with the dreads? I just want to punch that guy in the face. No, I'm like, you are an announcer in a tux with dreads. I hate you.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's not that, yeah. But, all right, number two.
That works.
Oh, wait. Okay, I guess it played. Go on.
Number two.
All right, thank you.
There you go.
Little Mac from Punch Out. Now, I guess
Mac.
Little Mac Daddy.
I suppose you could pick somebody more tough looking, like, say, Bald Bull or Mr. Dream.
Well, it's the fact that Little Mac is the underdog and he goes through all the circuits.
He beats them all. Every circuit. The world circuit, all the ones after that. And then he's also, like, beaten the crap out of, Nintendo characters now in the Smash Brothers
games.
Mm-hmm. Like, that he's
pretty strong in the
Man
Smash.
Tiny. He packs a lot of punch.
He's right? shorter than Rosalina, I believe.
Yep. He's the shortest character in the game, mayhaps.
But I get kind of upset because I actually... So in Super Punch-Out, that's also Little Mac, right? But it looks nothing like him.
I think the name is the same, but yeah. I think canonically he is not the same. You are not to treat him as the same Little Mac.
It's Little Mac's evil twin brother.
Or
Punch-Out doesn't really recognize the existence of Super Punch-Out.
Yeah, which I am sad about. And he puts the work in. It's not like he's a...
He trains.
Know, he trains. He's not just a...
He runs in his pink jumpsuit.
Yeah, yeah.
As, yeah. It gets trained by the guy. I like when he wins in Smash Brothers that then the coach... Crap, what's it?
Doc.
Doc. the doc just shows up, like, yeah, he did it.
Like, do little training exercises.
Yeah. Well, then he, like, if you listen to all the quotes in the Smash Brothers thing, like, it's him talking, like, all right, little Mac, on your way to the world championship. Like,
have you seen the commercial for it? The TV commercial for Super Smash 3DS?
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. Yeah, yeah.
The trainer, and he's like, he's throwing, like, the water bottle all on him. Like,
yeah.
You won, Mac, you won.
All right, number one.
Number one.
Balrog from Street Fighter.
I fight money.
So, oh. Balrog, what, is that a quote from the anime? Or?
No, that's what he says every time he loses in the American
version. Well, so originally he was
Mike Bison.
Because a very obvious Mike Tyson reference. Then out of fear of lawsuits, Capcom just did the old name change where
Switcheroo.
Vega, which is Bison's name in Japan, that got moved over to Balrog, who then became Vega, and then Vega, and then M. Bison became Vega, and then, yeah, it was just...
Not confusing at all. Not at all. It's a twister.
So, yeah, they handed in by Balrog, yeah, whatever.
And a lot of people were sad that Dudley from Street Fighter 3 originally was not on the list, but Balrog's the classic.
Look, Dudley's cool.
I'm not.
I like Dudley, but no, I think this is a true statement. No Street Fighter 3 character is better than a Street Fighter 2 character. Any Street Fighter 2 character is better than a Street Fighter.
Wow.
A Street Fighter 3 character
right.
Now.
I'm going to see comments now.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Now, I can't think of...
People swear
I
by
mean,
Street
I love
Fighter
Remy,
3.
But...
I swear by it.
No, yeah, I'm standing by that. I love Street Fighter 3. I think I played the crap out of Third Strike on the Dreamcast.
They're like, it's so technical. It's technical.
With all the parries and bullets.
Dudley's cool, but Balrog's the original, and he's got the Gigaton Punch, which you can just charge for the whole match, and then... Three, and then you just wallop them.
And I love his stage with
Vegas.
Like, yeah, the Vegas stage with all the people watching in the paparazzo.
And then when you win, he gets pigeons thrown out and money just falls on the stage. Mm-hmm. Also, when he his getting KO'd sound in Street Fighter 2 is amazing because he just goes, no.
He has a weird scene in the anime movie where, like, he barely even does anything, but he makes, like, his chest explode. He's watching a fight between Zangief and Blanka, and then, like Zangief looks at him like, you want to fight? And then, like, then Balrog just puffs out his chest till, like, all his buttons burst off his tuxedo.
Oh, wait, doesn't he? Oh. Isn't that a winning thing on the game where he holds out both hands and he goes, and the front?
Yeah, it rips. Comes off? Yeah.
That's
like it just comes off.
That's
like,
interesting.
When that happens.
I know, right?
Also, here's a fun fact. So, Daigo is really known for playing Ryu, but he also plays Balrog in Street Fighter 2 because he's just that good in tournaments.
I see. Mm. I like it better when dudes like shake it up and play somebody new or different. Like, the Daigo seems to be very pure about just like, look, this is the guy I'm playing with. Maybe I could do
changed
better.
Recently,
maybe I could do better with Akuma, but I don't care.
Like, yeah.
That's
dedication. Yeah. That's loyalty.
Okay, that is the top seven brutalist boxers, baddest boxers.
And I think we can finish it up with a nice clip that I think Lucas will appreciate.
My fight money!
classic. All right, well, while we recover from this beating, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the brief news of the week and then two big old reviews right on the other side of this.
Radio Radar is brought to you in part by Audible.com, where you can download audiobooks like Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter, and Ready Player One. Download a free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/gamesradar.
And we're back! Hey!
Hello.
Hi.
I'm regretting we didn't talk about Minecraft's buyout last week, but
I mean, it's not like, it's like, I'm sure no one is listening to this going, oh my god, what?
Yeah, it's true. But alright, well, so Ashley, I'm depending on you to talk about this. There was some Assassin's Creed news this week that excited some folks, right?
Yeah, they announced that there's going to... Well, we already knew there was going to be a Unity Season Pass, obviously.
Because it is a AAA game that's on multi-platform, so it will have a Season Pass.
Exactly. Yes. But in addition to one that's about Arno at the end of Assassin's Creed Unity, that's supposed to be like the darkest game, the darkest story they've ever told, which I think is a very tall order. There's also going to be Assassin's Creed Chronicles China, which is I guess the best way to describe it is like a semi 3D, 2D side scroller.
2.5D.
2.5, is that?
Or is it?
2.5D?
Basically Strider.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Set in Imperial China, and it has a character that a lot of people have wanted to see return, mm-hmm. who was first seen in one of the short films named Xiao Jun, and she's going to be the main character.
Yeah, to be honest, I was hoping they'd go to China in full. Like, I like Revolutionary France. It's a good setting. But the second I saw Xiao Zhu, I don't want to mispronounce
it. That girl.
When I saw that young lady in the Assassin's Creed Revelations Eretta, mm-hmm. I wanted to see more of her. Like, it seemed like, well, this is such a big setup for her. Like, they literally passed the torch of, like, here's an important plot point. I am handing it to you now. I was like...
That's true. For anyone who doesn't know, basically, she shows up in...
Embers.
In Embers, which is the short film that shows, like, the last days of Ezio's life. Mm-hmm. And she comes to see him to become one of his disciples. And right before he dies, he gives her this box and says, only open it when you really need it. And then we never find out what's in the box!
It's the golden apple.
It's something.
He's guarding it.
I like that Ezio's death too is just this like kind of quiet moment, just like just heart attack on a bench, like nobody kills him.
Just, yeah,
he's just sitting there. Just.
I mean, there's plenty of conspiracy theories because a guy sits down next to him on the bench, and there's plenty of conspiracy theories that like the guy killed him, mm-hmm. which I'm like, no, shut up. It's better if it's just like. He
that
just
after
goes
his
quietly.
Violent life, that he goes quietly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm tired of conspiracy theories, man.
I really like the idea that that guy's just a metaphor for the little snobby brat that he was as a teenager.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, look how far I've come. Bleh.
But he is not.
Very graceful.
But so you're like excited for this side content?
I'm looking forward to it. It'll probably be pretty short, is my guess, because it is just part of a season pass. But if it does well, I'm hoping maybe they'll think about doing some more stuff in China.
Fledged.
Yeah.
Is it standalone as well, or is it just...
It is a standalone game all on its own. It'll just be part of the season pass. So I'm not sure
if
you'll
have to... Well,
then
maybe it won't be short featured.
You think
it's
they'll
possible.
Standalone it? Do it like a standalone option, maybe?
Well, if it is, if you can buy it standalone, then it should meet that.
I'm going to talk over you. I think you do have to buy it with Dead Kings, but I'm not sure you have to buy it with Unity. So, we'll see.
They should clear that messaging.
That would be nice if we could find out about that. I would like it to be standalone. I think that would be really cool.
Well, so that was pretty much all the big news of the week, as far as I can recall, unless you guys have anything you want to throw out there really quickly. Nobody? Well, I think that we can't think of any news because we were all just so plugged in into the big releases of this week, which there were numerous of them. Before we get on the two Lucas knows about, like there was also FIFA 15 came out, mm-hmm. which... I believe our
got high marks.
Freelancer, yeah, gave it a 4 out of 5. Thought it was good.
Nice.
I think and 4.5.
4.5. Wow.
Mm. And then
you liked it more than Halo Reach.
Wow,
that's a classic Games
that's
Radar
a
reference.
Throwback.
That is a real throwback there that nobody in this room gets. It. Well, Lucas
does. Get it.
He was paying attention back in 2010. let's see. Okay,
Forza Horizon 2.
Yeah, Forza Horizon 2.
Like
which Dave
4 to 5.
Reviewed by one Dave Roberts, which he enjoyed it, but it's racing your way on the Xbox One. I'm still waiting to play Defense Grid 2. I do have a copy of it. I kickstarted it, so I've definitely been wanting to play it, but the first Defense Grid was so awesome. Like, it really was.
I missed out on it. So.
Such an underrated, like, I was sure you would have played it because it was like PC first. I didn't play it until it was on the Xbox 360.
I played some Drive Club this week, and I didn't get sick.
That's
nice.
Awesome.
Ooh, congratulations.
Ouch. I also didn't come in last all of the time.
Oh, wow.
I know. Very good. I know. Raising the roof by lowering the standards, people. Yeah, and it was super fun.
But, all right, so then the two big reviews that posted this week, why don't we start with Smash Brothers?
Okay.
All right, so...
The elephant in the room.
So the game doesn't come out till next Friday in America, and we'd already had an import review based on the Japanese version of it.
Yes.
But today, on Friday, we posted our U.S. review, or for the U.S. version. So you wrote that, Lucas, so why don't you get to talking?
So here's what happened. I played the crap out of the Japanese version, retail version.
Unlocked everybody.
Yeah, and gave that a review, 4 stars. That went up a couple weeks ago, maybe two weeks ago. And the only thing I didn't get to extensively test with that build because we didn't have enough copies was multiplayer. Specifically,
local multiplayer.
Local multiplayer, 4-player. I had played 2-player and 3-player. A fair deal.
Because we had the 3 demo units that we had been playing on.
Yeah, but we did not have 4 copies at one time until this week.
Yes.
And when we played it earlier in the week, it was awful. Like, the latency...
When it was up to 4-player, the lag was tremendous. Like, in every match. Yeah, we played for a good, 2 hours in 4-player.
It was very, very... depressing, really. It took the fun right out of the...
I think we could actually hear you out in the main area.
Well, you could hear us having
fun.
Yeah. We could hear their heart breaking.
Yeah, we'd be like, all right, I got you.
Mid-sentence.
Yeah, and if you didn't read the review I put up of the Japanese version, basically, the game is great. It plays really well when latency isn't a problem. All the characters are well-balanced. It's fun. As any Smash Brothers is. There's tons of polish on it, which Nintendo's known for.
Mm-hmm.
The online can be spotty.
Yeah, but I mean, after Brawl, it's still kind of what you expect.
Yeah, it's definitely better than Brawl's online. And the Smash Run mode isn't great.
Eh.
So
I do like Classic and All-Star Battle, and the stadium stuff is fun, but yeah, Smash Run is not...
It's a disappointment.
Yeah, it was like supposed to be this big mode for the game of like, well, man, when you check out Smash Run, that's all you're gonna want to play. Like,
nope.
Or it's a very 3DS specific mode too. Like, it's not one. Just the way it works, which is single player and then multiplayer, doesn't really work that way on the Wii. Like, you couldn't translate it to the Wii U.
And while I think the idea of custom fighters is neat, where you can change how their special moves work if you collect, you know, the alternatives throughout playing, in practice it's just not very fun, because getting better at a fighting game means learning how the other characters act and what you can do in certain situations against them. And if you're using custom fighters, then you don't know how Pac-Man or
it's about constant strategy of knowing how far somebody's attack goes,
yeah,
of knowing the exact right time to dodge or to do a reflect. And yeah, you put in custom, like, then it doesn't matter. Also,
it just muddles the mixture.
How can you even play around much with a custom when it's built for, well, it's not built for, but it uses amiibo, and amiibos aren't even out yet.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. But yeah, I wasn't really impressed by that. But the game overall, it was great. So 4 out of 5. Now,
for the import one.
When we played the retail version 4-player,
in our
like office, we were saying, it was just unplayable, pretty much. I knew that about online 4-player.
I mean, we finished matches, but yeah, it was just like,
painful.
In a game, the backbone of the game is 4-player multiplayer. That it was that lag was killing it.
Like, yeah, Smash, like for casual, you know, pro players are obviously going to want 1-on-1, no items. But for casual players, like 4-player Smash is something that is iconic to the series. It's such a classic party game that people get together and just have 4-player matches all day. And for that to be so broken in the retail version was very disconcerting. It was heartbreaking is the word I used. So I reevaluated it, gave the game a 3 out of 5. And now we're finding that maybe that lag was like some weird isolated incident for us?
Yeah, so...
A 2-hour isolated incident,
yeah.
But...
Well, so the nitty-gritty of it is that we were playing on a professional capture unit of it, which is a slightly altered system given to us by Nintendo for getting video off the thing. So it's not a true retail version, and that it's can't we can't take four player anywhere else, and that it could be we're surrounded by like damaging Wi-Fi signals or something.
Interference, basically.
Interference, yeah. And so when we did take three player out of it, because we also you did three and two yesterday in that same room, and you also had lag.
Yeah.
But then today when we played three outside of the office. Like, no, the lag...
It worked fine.
Yeah, the lag was not present, so...
So we're going to be testing it extensively over the next week, and if it was just that one day, that one particular location, I guess, then, yeah, we're open to reevaluating the game.
Yeah, it is, but as it stands now, from the experience you had, like, that...
It was
that
a bad
three, three out of five was the correct score to give. Like we, the four player needed to work and it wasn't. Like that's, that said, even at its best, like it's not. I don't think it's a replacement for the Wii U version. Like when you get the Wii U version, that's the one you'll be playing. Like,
and it's so close. It's so close to release. Also, like it's a weird situation of you're really not. There's no need to buy this 3DS version.
Well, though, if you're a Smash Brothers fan, you'll take what Smash you can get.
If you're a true fan.
If there's a lot more people out there with 3DSs.
Yeah, that's true.
Than Wii U's, then the smart move is going to be to drop that 3DS one first. That's what I'd do.
No, I mean, that is true. Like, there aren't many Wii U's out there. Though they won't. Though it also makes it less of a system seller to put out the Wii U one. It's also so weird that it's called Super Smash Brothers for Nintendo 3DS. That's the full name of the game.
I also saw an interesting, and this has nothing to do with the review, but I saw an interesting argument online that, like, by having access to the 3DS version, it makes the Wii U version that less special because it's not some super exciting new thing when that version comes out. It's just a different iteration of this thing that you've already been playing for 2 months.
Makes me hope those conspiracy theories of new characters being added to the Wii U version.
I hope they're
true. That then unlock on the 3DS version. I hope it's true. Because if it's like, no, it's exactly the same. Here you go. Like, it's just an HD. Like, it does take some of the
wind
out of the sails.
It will be a great game, though.
We'll have an awesome time with it. I
definitely will, because I haven't touched the 3DS version.
Well, you don't even have a 3DS.
You're biased against handhelds.
I am. So people like me will love it.
I can't wait to play it, now that I know what I'm supposed to do.
Yes. Well, and it is a 2D game, so, well, I mean, there's a lot of moving background, so that might cause problems for you. I
bet I could get a good half hour in it before I turn green.
And that'll get you, like, at least four good matches.
That's all right,
so that's where we're at currently on Smash Brothers. Stay tuned on the site for updates if we have them, and we'll probably have some more details next week. But good job on that one, Lucas.
Thank you. It was a team effort.
But then you had the other giant review of the week as well.
Selfish.
Yes.
Middle-Earth.
Lowercase e.
Lowercase e. Shadow.
Colon.
Shadow of Mordor.
Yes, which... it feels like a lot of people were not paying such close attention to this game.
I mean, I wouldn't have.
And
in that way, it does remind me of Arkham Asylum, because a lot of people weren't paying attention to Arkham Asylum either. Before,
yeah, I was one of them, I guess. But this is probably one of the best games I've played all year.
It is extremely
good. If you don't know anything about it, it's basically a Lord of the Rings take on Batman Arkham style gameplay or Assassin's Creed, where it's a huge open world set in Mordor. It's got two huge regions. One is like the desolate Uruk spawning like fortress area, and then there's a lush plain sort of nice open fields area that you unlock later in the game.
It's Udun and something else.
Udun and Nirn.
Properly Tolkien, Tolkienish.
By the way, on the comments for the YouTube review of this, they said like you had some big spoilers in it or something.
Oh,
I don't know what spoilers they're
talking
about.
I don't think so. In fact, we made a point of avoiding spoilers when it comes to the Wraith. Talion is basically, he dies right at the beginning of the game. That's the first cutscene.
Yeah, that's not a spoiler. That's like the first thing that happens.
And he gets a chance at revenge because a wraith basically merges with his body and makes him immortal. Mm. So he can fight Uruk time after time, even though he's getting killed.
So the game, is it in the world of the films?
It takes place between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings.
But the film's not the book.
Gollum is definitely film Gollum. Like, he looks exactly like
he
does in the movies.
Schmeagol. They advertise the crap out of him being in the game, too, so that is not a spoiler.
Yeah. But
wow, I hope that's not what they meant.
Is Tom Bombadil in it?
No.
Good, because that guy sucks.
But the main... So, the gameplay is great.
Yes.
The combat's super, super good. It's super violent.
Oh,
but
yes.
I actually found that pretty entertaining, because, you know, Lord of the Rings, they have beheadings in there and stuff, but this is, like, that amped up to 11.
It almost made me sad how, like, realistic it was, because it's not just, like, you come down on a guy and, like, slice him down the middle. It's... You knock him to the ground. He turns around and, like, throws up his arms and tries to, like, push you away. You grab his arms and throw them off and stab him in the chest. And it's like,
it's like, you won't need these where you're going.
Well, I saw the gallery and I was like, holy crap, so much neck stabbing.
Yes.
So much face stabbing.
Head explode.
There are many ways to execute Uruk. And the combat in close quarters, CQC, is basically like Batman where... You're fighting,
like
counter, fighting, counter, special move. You can also do ranged attacks with the Wraith's elf shot arrows, which is pretty cool because you can slow down time and line up a headshot and then let it go.
And then there's that enemy system, right?
Yes, but the main draw of the game is the nemesis system, where...
Oh, Ashley, you also have played a lot of it, too. Yeah,
I did.
I should have said that.
Not as much as Lucas, but I've played a decent chunk. More than probably most of the people listening to this.
So basically what this system does is it randomly generates Uruk captains and war chiefs. And these are basically the tough guys, the head honchos of the Uruk and Orc army, a.k.a. Sauron's forces. And when you die to these Uruk, they get a promotion, or they'll get special abilities because they killed you, and they'll remember how they killed you and where and, like, what the circumstance was. So essentially the game creates your enemies based on your experience, and it's super impressive. Like, I think the thing that impressed me most was the voice work they did, because there's a huge range of personality types that they can have. And
they can be crazy or really violent, or I think there was one that I had named Otha, and he knew, like, pretty much from the second he saw me the second time, he's like, oh, I know what's up with you.
Yeah.
And it's all random, but it makes it very personalized to your experience then.
Yeah, it's basically
you don't
like...
You know Otha. You never met Otha.
You never met Otha.
And Ashley doesn't know Norik the Assassin.
I do not
know my
Norik.
Boy. I was saying in the review and to my roommates that it makes you understand better the relationship between Batman and the Joker, because it really is like, you're the other half of me. Like, we give each other purpose by existing, and I wouldn't want to really live in this game world without you.
But I'm going to have to kill you
at some point, which is super cool.
And of course, I'm sure the game ends with him getting his revenge and killing Sauron at the end. And saying,
"Oh yeah, totally."
He just runs up to the tower and says, "Gotcha!"
Knocks all down, and then everything's fine in the Lord of the Rings world before the Lord of the Rings even begins.
Yeah, it's a new timeline. Frodo doesn't even have to take the
spoiler
ring.
Spoiler alert!
I am joking the joke is because it takes place between the two. Like, you know where the end.
Well, I
you
mean,
know what's
make assumption.
Happen.
I mean, to my understanding, from the very beginning, it's not that he's necessarily fighting Sauron. He's fighting the Black Hand of Sauron.
He's pissed off at the dudes who work for Sauron that killed
and
his family.
Killed his family,
so,
and then him.
Who knows? Maybe that'll turn out okay. Probably not. But
or maybe it'll just end with nothing to set up for a sequel.
Ooh.
But in any case, the game itself is already an amazing open world game, but the nemesis system is what really puts it over the top, because it's just so cool to have these enemies that grow with you as you play the game, and you grow to tell your own stories by fighting them as you progress through the story.
Can I tell one story real quick?
Because
I think this
do
is
it,
great.
Do it, do it.
So there was one guy that I was going up against. He killed me, and he was like some kind of hunter. Like that was his thing. And so I tracked him down after I came back to life, and he was on a hunting mission. So I climbed up one of the towers, and I was standing, and I was watching him, and he was hunting these ghouls, and there were a ton of them all around him. And I shot him in the back. So he fell down, and then I shot a campfire right next to him, so he was, like, flat on the ground. I was about to shoot him one more time to kill him, and then I saw all the ghouls coming and surrounding him, and I'm like, nah, I'll just let this happen. And they ate him alive.
Wow.
Uniquely my experience, and it was fantastic.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, that's basically awesome. Life goes on in the Uruk army, even if you're not around. So when you die, yes, you come back, but the people who killed you all get promoted,
mm-hmm.
and you have to deal with
during
them.
Your death, you get to watch like them rise up the ranks. Like,
yeah.
this guy
yes.
killed that
so
guy, and then he moved up to general.
So it's like, so when you come back, so the real question is, you come back, but when do you come back? Is it like days?
Like,
is
it seems
it
like
moments?
Weeks.
Oh, it's weeks.
Like, I'm not really sure. It seems like maybe
for all
a
that
week.
Promotion, like, I don't know. Like, how fast did people
well, the
get
Uruk
promoted?
Army.
He has to, he has
right.
to go
Huge.
Back and report.
They
it.
Do
it's
a
basically,
lot of
oh,
stuff.
You killed the guy that gives you orders? Okay, you're the new guy.
Yeah.
Boy,
and
there's just no structure to these.
And plus,
they
he also they also, when you run into them, if they remember you, they seem to make it sound like it happened a while ago.
Yeah, okay. There's that. They seem very... I experienced this once. I played at E3 for about 40 minutes and got to see... I did the stupid thing where, like... this guy. All right, I'm going to kill him. He killed me. All right, you know what? When I come back, I'm totally going to kill him. And then I just run straight for him.
Yep.
And the developer was like, you might want to stand back and let him like take some damage in this fight. And I was like,
no,
fuck this. This guy died right now. I dive in, and like he kills me again. And then there's just this great scene of just him getting in your face like, yeah, I killed you.
I think Otha has actually said to me before, because I've gone after Otha a couple times and died every time. He's like, all right, come back again. I'll be ready for you then, too.
Yeah. Like
wow.
I said, the voice
so
work is just so
rude.
It's so good at like making you really want revenge.
And the main character
oh,
is played by
so
superstar Troy Baker.
Yeah, and he done it again. His voice work is
How
super
is
good.
How is he so
this.
Different, too? Like,
I know. But he does play all these like kind of grizzled old men with really tragic pasts.
And he's so dreamy.
Yeah, that's
oh,
the thing.
I know.
He plays all these grizzled guys, but he is like such. He's such a handsome man with just like toe-headed.
Fellow.
Are you saying Joel isn't handsome?
Yeah, Jill's ruggedly handsome, I suppose. I don't know. It's just, well, I've seen interviews where Troy Baker has been asked, like, what's kind of an insulting question, which is just like, why aren't you starring in more things? Like, you're handsome. It's just like, you look good enough to not be an ugly voice actor. You're not an ugly voice actor. Why aren't you acting in things?
What like, does he respond to that?
He's like, he's a very diplomatic interview guy. He's just like, I just really enjoy this. It's about the work and blah. And like, when
he's
I've,
just a likable dude.
When I've asked
Seems
him
so
questions
nice.
Of like, hey, let's talk about your whole career, he, like, in a very nice but talented PR-trained way, he's like, yeah, I do think that about my career, especially with this game. And right? And he's back onto the
same
direction.
Look at
they
that.
Brought him for.
What a pro.
So
man.
Dreamy.
What a pro.
The PR people don't hire him to talk about games that aren't their game. That's not why they bring him to events like that.
Yes,
all
but
right,
in any
score.
Case, Shadow of Mordor, amazing game. Gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Ring it in,
Ashley and I were, you know, seriously talking about the chance of giving it a 5 out of 5. But
it was close.
In the end, we decided, you know, there are some repetitive elements to the game.
Boy, that sounds like a G-O-T-W, nope, G-O-T-Y.
Candidate.
Absolutely.
Candidate, yeah. A G-O-T-W yeah. is Game of the Week.
Oh.
Which it totally wins that.
Yes, that it wins. But if you don't promote it for Game of the Year,
oh,
I
no,
will.
Yeah, it's easily in the running for 2014.
Double,
it's
double
already
nomination.
Time to start thinking
it's
about that
up.
Stuff, guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
put that list together.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your answer is last week's question of the week in the community segment. But before we take this break, we're going to have a quick interview with the developers behind Borderlands, the pre-sequel. We talked to them about their upcoming game, and how it was made, all that good stuff. Check it out right now. Hey, everybody. This is Henry again with a quick interview with our two people from Borderlands, the pre-sequel. I'm here with...
Joel from 2K Australia.
Anthony from Gearbox.
Cool. Okay, so just... out of the way, like, the pre-sequel is out really soon, and, like, what What is it exactly? Like, it's not, it's a prequel and a sequel together, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's set in between Borderlands 1 and Borderlands 2. And it has four new Vault Hunters, a whole new story. You're leaving Pandora for the first time, going up to Elpis, which is that moon you see with the lava cracks in Borderlands 2. You're also going to go to the Hyperion Space Station, which is the big H up in the sky. Hmm. We've got new enemies, new weapons, vehicles, all that kind of stuff.
Well, like, so how do you, you know, how did you find the space to, like, put in a new story and all that, like, for this?
Well, given the sort of production plan that we had and stuff like that, we knew we wanted something that was achievable and cool, but also had stuff that hadn't really been done before. You know, so setting it after Borderlands 2 would have implied, like, oh, we need to do this big, crazy, important thing for the lore and stuff like that. But going between Borderlands 1 and 2, there's a 5-year span of time that we wrote in for ourselves between those two games, and there's some stuff there that we thought could be kind of interesting, like finding out, you know, how Handsome Jack came to power, and, you know, doing some stuff with the movie. Because basically, when we first announced the game, all the way back in people immediately really wanted to know, like, oh, cool, we're going to go to the moon at the end of Borderlands 2, right? That's what's going to happen. And we were like, ooh, shit, no, you're not. Like, we never even thought about that. And so people have been wanting to go to the moon ever since we announced it, but we didn't want to just, like, set it after Borderlands 2 and have it be like, I guess you're there fighting the last 5 stormtroopers on the Death Star after the Emperor is already dead. So we figured we'll take that and sort of tell a new story that still takes place on the moon, still involves the moon base. But isn't that particular flavor of just, you know, redundant. And what's cool about setting it there is it forced us to be more creative in terms of, like, okay, well, if we're living there and Jack's the main character, you've got to be playing as people who would work with Jack, which weirdly means that you're playing as a bunch of bad guys, like Nisha, who's the sheriff in Borderlands 2, and Wilhelm, who's a boss in Borderlands 2, who are just not good people. And then Athena's there to be sort of a moral compass, and Claptrap's there because he's the worst. And, like, just sort of finding excuses to take existing characters and what would they find out, like, what would they play like, you know, what would a Claptrap action skill be, what would a Claptrap, you know, player character feel like, what would a Athena player character feel like. It was a cool, like, inverse of the way we usually try to figure out how the games work. We don't start with gameplay and wrap a story around them. This time we started with story and wrapped gameplay around it.
Yeah, I think something really cool the writers did by choosing play characters which fans are already familiar with, really expanded their interaction and kind of their voice within the game. So all of the playable characters have so much more dialogue when they're either talking to each other or reacting to NPCs. It's different every single, for each of the playable characters. I don't know how much dialogue you guys actually wrote in for the playable characters compared to Borderlands 2, but it was a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, how did the, you know, as the writer at Gearbox and then, you know, working with a side company like 2K Australia, how did the communication work, you know?
It was pretty constant. It was, we would just, you know, either fly down there for weeks at a time or talk on a video conference a lot. Like, I think one of the weird things that's actually kind of neat about the game is that Maurice Suckling and Merrick Walton, who are the writers that work with 2K Australia on the majority of the game, about, you know, 60, 70, 80% of the game, that's their voice, you know, in the game. And when you're on the moon surface, it feels very Australian. We have all these Australian gags, all the characters who are native to the moon speak with Australian accents. And then when you go up to Helios, the moon base, that's some of the stuff that I wrote, and it's sort of American again. So it's like, if you're tired of things being classy on the moon, you get up to Helios and you get back to fart jokes. Yeah, and
I don't know if
I'd
call Merrick classy.
And there are some pretty unclassy jokes on the moon that I wrote that I'm pretty happy with. So we'll see how that works.
Well, with the pre-sequel, that gives you a chance to possibly, like, retcon some things, like, story-wise and gameplay-wise. Was there anything from Borderlands 2 that you kind of wanted to reevaluate in the pre-sequel?
Not any really big things. Most of the stuff that we wanted to do, we felt like, okay, this is reasonable. And doesn't mess up too much stuff. Like, there are little niggly bits that I'm sure you can find if you dig really deep, but as far as I can tell, everything is standard. But there were little tiny dumb things, like some dude from our community, I believe it's Goth Lion or one of the other dudes, or Admiral Bauru or something, found that in Borderlands 1, even though in Borderlands 2, the very beginning, we make it really, really clear, Claptrap can never climb stairs. There's something about his wheel that makes it impossible for him to climb stairs. So, and somebody went back to Borderlands 1, which I didn't write, and found a Claptrap climbing a stairs and went, explain this! This is nonsense! And so there's a low chance that if you're playing as a Claptrap and you stop moving for a while, that he'll start rambling and tell a very, very 3-minute long story trying to retcon and explain away why that one Claptrap in Borderlands 1 was capable of climbing stairs. So basically just a bunch of bullshit in answer to your question.
That's cool. Now, but gameplay-wise, pretty much like staying the course with...
No.
No.
It's totally different. I mean, when we were going to the moon, we had this moon promise to deliver on, and the first thing we thought of was low gravity. The second thing we thought of is that's way too scary to try and do. But luckily, we actually, you know, the
third thing you thought was, fuck it.
Yeah, well, actually, like, the modifications that Gearbox have done to Unreal allow you to prototype really, really quickly, and we were actually all over at Gearbox, and within a day or two, we had this low gravity oxygen system down pretty close to what is in the final game in a prototype. But we knew it had to go across the entire game, across playable characters, enemies, you know, the way the levels were built and everything. And it actually changes up the entire core gameplay loop because you can jump over enemies and validate their cover. They can do the same thing to do. You can scale these massive towers. The scale of movement is really different. The slam, which is this attack which allows you to go really fast down to the ground, do an area of effect attack, becomes a really useful weapon that you use throughout the entire game. We had a pretty tight production schedule, but we wanted to make it feel fresh and different, not just to Borderlands, but to everything else out there.
Yeah, I mean, the honestly, like, it's hard to go back to Borderlands 2 after playing pre-sequel, because I don't like using cover, and Borderlands 2 kind of incentivizes using cover a lot. And pre-sequel, because of both big changes like the low gravity and the butt stomping, and small changes like we made enemies do a touch less damage, and your hip-firing accuracy is a little bit better, so that rather than sort of staying still, aiming down the sights and popping off, you are much more active. You're running around a lot. You're trying to find different high places in the environment to get from so you can have a really powerful slam that happens as a result. It's not a slower-paced, cover-based shooter like Borderlands 2 could have been if you were playing carefully. It's much more aggressive and much more reckless and, in my opinion, way more fast-paced and fun as a result of it.
And you talked about the weapons, like, how'd you expand on, like, the already, like, massive amount of weapons that Borderlands is known for?
Well, the first thing we knew, like, as soon as we were going to the moon, you know, being a little bit more sci-fi, is we had to have lasers in there, and that's a completely new weapon type, and because it's Borderlands, it has all the manufacturers, the different weapon components, so we have beam lasers and bolt lasers and the splitters and all those kinds of ones, but we also added cryo, which is a new elemental type, and that allows... you to freeze enemies and shatter them into a million pieces. And, of course, enemies can do that too. We have plants which can do it. We have creatures that can do it. We have vehicles that, in the Stingray, you can actually get a cryo laser where you're shooting along in this thing, you're freezing guys and then shattering straight through them. It's that's pretty awesome.
It's really cool. One last question, like, is this is a, you know, prequel and... So is the Tales from the Borderlands game that the Telltale is making. Is there any...
From the Borderlands actually takes place after Borderlands 2.
Oh, it does? Yeah. Oh, shit. That was a bad question then.
There may be... assuming everything goes according to plan, though, there will be some things that you'll see crossover between the two and go, oh, neat. They thought ahead. It's not going to be anything mind-blowing, but hopefully you'll go, oh, look, they did it, a plan.
I think we, at the panel at PAX, we actually did announce that this is set... after.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay, yeah. So, there's a framing narrative that sets up this sort of flashback that is the pre-sequel. So the very beginning and very end of the game technically take place after Borderlands 2, but everything in the middle is this sort of like Athena saying, well, this is what happened, and then you go back in time.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, everybody. We are back, and now it's time for that community segment. Love that song. Love
it. So good.
Video coming soon.
It's going to be my new ringtone.
All right, so our question last week was about what demo did you play that really sold you on a game or that you played more than any other?
That's a good question.
Yeah, like, do you any come to mind for you, Lucas, since you weren't on that episode?
Jack and Daxter.
Mm, the original?
Yeah, I played a demo disc of the original, Precursor Legacy, and I played it over and over and over, and then I bought the game.
I don't like that subtitles on the first game. Like, let's put a subtitle on the first game. Like, come on, just have the
Middle-earth Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah, that it's the start of the Middle-earth series. Blech. And really, like, it's really like three. It's like two colons. Really, it's the Lord of the Rings : Middle-earth : Anywho, why don't we start reading down the list? Lucas, why don't you read the first reply?
Sure. This is from Lethal Migraine, who says, last year, in what apparently was the final year of Summer of Arcade, which on a side note is depressing because good games came from that, came the greatest game in the history of gaming, Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. Playing the demo showed how single-player co-op can be quite fun and how, if done correctly, you can make a tremendous story without any talking. Due to the amazing demo, I bought the game, which turned out to be, like I said, the single greatest game ever made.
Boy, this is a good really game. Likes that game.
Yeah. But, I mean, whew, that's dedication.
Anthony?
All right. Cubanigma says, oh, man, I remember back in the GameCube. Oh, wait, hold on.
No, I think it means era.
I think I was going to say, yeah, okay, so let's start
it
over.
It does not mean a race.
Yeah, I was like, huh? Oh, man, I remember back in the GameCube era. Right before Metroid Prime had come out, and Toys R Us had a demo station
set up,
and I got my hand on it. And man, the emptiness of the tutorial level drew me into what became one of the best games of the generation.
That's a strangely unique experience, but I like it. Mm-hmm.
You'd think they'd kick you out.
No, you got to play it right. You got to go walk around for a little. Oops. Yeah, I used to do that.
Yeah, I remember.
You just outed yourself. Kids like you away.
It's all right.
I played many a Toys R Us demo.
All right. Atomizer says, right now I'm enjoying my balls off on the Forza Horizon 2 demo.
This game's so fun. Uh-oh.
And there go my balls.
Pick it up.
It's just so beautiful. Because, you know, anyway. I'll be taking off work on 9:30 just to get my fill of fuel and adrenaline.
Right. Fill of fuel.
He will do so as a eunuch.
Because he lost his balls.
His testicles are no longer...
No, they're gone.
Like, I thought eunuch meant no penis. Or no,
no.
It's different. There are different
castrato.
Kinds of eunuchs.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Wait, break it down.
Okay.
All
right. Castrated is nothing, right? It just means they just get your junk and they... It's giblets now. So you have nothing, right?
Oh, God.
Yep, that's
okay.
That.
You're nuts and you're
so
a eunuch.
What happens when you don't have... you have Frank, but you don't have the boys.
You've got Frank, but
that's
not the
called a eunuch. No. That's a eunuch. That's why they hired eunuchs to like take care of the ladies of the house because they wouldn't try to screw them, I guess. I don't know.
Huh. Okay.
Moving on.
Good to know.
Cyber Ninja says, currently I am obsessing over the Smash demo. I have already put more than 10 hours into it, and I see a lot more in the future, which gets me more pumped for the full game since I had... have always wanted a Smash on the go, seeing as I put a ton of time.
Bit of a runoff.
Seeing as I put a ton of time into Brawl, like more time on Brawl than every other Wii game I had put together. That's
breathe.
Four
Zen. Breathe.
Combine this with the fact that I play more handheld games in general, and you have 1-2 combo of awesomeness. So currently the demo is feeding my raging Smash addiction.
Yeah, I had to... I had some extra Smash codes I gave away on Twitter, and... I got to meet some very dedicated Smash Brothers fans who really, really wanted that demo.
Harder, please.
Jesus, what's going on over there?
I do think it's cool that Nintendo like gave out demos to make them special and gave out extras like, here's extra, do with them what you want. I just feel bad that like for a lot of people... their response was like, oh, what I'm going to do is fleece the desperate people
why
who want
the demo.
Why
limit a demo?
And to make Club Nintendo special, too, I guess.
I mean, the game is coming out, like, what?
Well, the demo's been out for a week now to everybody. Like, it was only private for a week. Then it went public on the next Friday. But still, like, just getting it a week early, like, it was torturing some poor Smash
some
fans.
Poor,
I really felt bad
fans.
For those guys. You know, but then I tell myself, too, like, they got money to spend on a Smash demo, then buy a Japanese 3DS in the system. Like, you got money to burn.
And what was the exact question with this? I don't, like...
The demo that sold you on a game you wouldn't have otherwise played?
I wasn't there last week.
Do you or Lucas have... Lucas said Jack and Daxter.
Lucas already
you
got
have
to
one?
Talk.
Oh.
I think this...
oh, my.
I think this might be cheating, because the game hasn't come out yet, but I'm pretty much 1,000% going to be buying Silent Hills when it comes out, because I played PT. I'm like, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care
Done
if
deal.
It's garbage, I'm buying it. It won't be garbage.
Hey, I'll be buying it with you so we can buy garbage together.
And then okay. we can scream like little girls
I
together.
I will kind of watch you guys play and scream.
We need to find someone new to hide behind a door. Lucas, I nominate you. You get
Do
to hide behind the door.
Silent Hills will actually come out in 2015?
Man.
It's too early to tell.
I could see 2016.
I mean, like, Kojima's putting out, like, you'll be, I feel like we're going to be lucky if the Phantom Pain comes out in 2015. Well,
I do love how little he's talked about the Phantom Pain. He's just like, so Silent Hill.
Seems well, like that's what he's more interested in, though. He's just been talking about Phantom Pain for like 2 years now. Like,
well, he's got the collection coming out too, the Metal Gear collection, but we don't know whether that's going to be.
I thought that was an iOS game.
Is it iOS?
I haven't gotten clarification.
Oh, all right,
guys.
Naughty.
So I'm going to pronounce Atomizer as the winner, the balls off character.
I like it.
It's good compensation.
Force of my balls
So,
I feel like that's a fair trade. Something for the prize.
We don't have any balls to send you.
For his balls.
So you're going to get something. So send an email to RadioRadar@GamesRadar.com. Tell us what systems you own so we can figure out what to send y'all. And now time for the new question of the week for this week. So. Boy, everybody loves Shadow of Mordor, and even though it's a licensed game, which normally are supposed to be garbage. So
that seems to be changing. As
to a degree, yes. I think just all the garbage is now just an iOS endless runner. Like,
Like, you know what? You're probably right.
They don't bother making a shitty game. Like, it's cheaper. Like, oh, if we're just going to make something shitty, let's just make an endless runner.
Mobile.
Like,
let's just make it mobile.
Yeah. Right. That'll trick more kids into using their parents' credit card on their iPad that doesn't have a good.
My God. That's insightful.
So all of this money I've been pumping into Kim Kardashian Superstar, this
You've
is all
had.
For naught.
You've been had.
Fudge!
You've been had.
All right, but so...
It happens to the best of
if
us.
If you were to have a... What licensed game would you like to see get the... what license would you like to see get the Mordor treatment? Book, movie, song?
So I want some... I want some clarification on
I was going to ask.
By Mordor treatment, do you mean
as in
open
a quality,
world?
Well, a very good triple A... like major developer
Spider-Man,
game
please.
Made by a developer.
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man? Do you
please.
Feel have you felt Spider-Man has been lacking for a while? I was just being an impartial interviewer there in to ask you a question. I of course agree with you. Like there is the last great Spider-Man game was Web of Shadows. That's kind of it. Though I mean I liked the writing in Shattered Dimensions, and like it was written by Dan Slott. He did a good job. He's one of my favorite Spider-Man writers. Have you ever met Dan Slott, Jan? Cool guy.
Jan knows everyone in the comic book industry.
Of course, she knows everyone.
Period.
Full stop.
And then Peter David wrote the other one, and he's cool. I like Peter David a lot. And so, but yeah, there needs to be another really good. There needs to be another really good Spider-Man game. It's overdue. I'm gonna say Matrix.
Ooh.
Oh.
Because I feel like
Half
the Matrix
of Neo
is
didn't
still
do it for you.
I worked on that game. Okay, I helped work on that game.
As
the
you Matrix, break down,
and I'm gonna say nothing.
The Matrix could have been
it was what it was.
Well. Enter the Matrix was trash, pure trash.
I liked that they tried to weave it into the story instead of just retelling the movie.
Yes,
but that was about it.
Path of Neo was better, and it had the awesome ending where the Wachowskis just show up and go like, look, the ending doesn't work as a boss fight, so here's your dumb boss fight.
Yeah.
That's a cool scene.
I can say nothing else about that due to
all right.
legal ramifications.
But I think finally technology has caught up enough that the Matrix could truly get the great game it deserves. And there's been a decade of distance from everybody's disappointment with Reloaded and Revelations that they could just like, it's the first Matrix. Like, or they could just say like, pretend Revelations didn't happen. This is the real Revelations. Like, this is the real ending to it. And, oh, man, remember there's the Matrix Online? Blech.
Oh,
yeah,
Sega.
I do, which is long. That was Sega?
Sega published it,
yeah, he published it. And I remember they made a big deal of, like, oh, Morpheus died. Like, that was one of their storylines. Like, Morpheus was killed. You need to find out how to do something.
It's like, whoa, okay.
Whatever.
It became a detective game.
I'm going to
They
channel.
Did get Lawrence Fishburne to say stuff, at least.
Anywho.
It's Ghost.
I'm going to channel Lorenzo here and go with Star Wars. I think there's not been an open world Star Wars that's also an action game, has there?
Fortunately,
Knights of the Old Republic
supposed to be what this was. Like
Force that was Unleashed still kind of guided, though, right?
Yeah. Like it wasn't. I mean, it was a series of corridors, yes.
But I mean, is that
Wow.
But I think, yeah, if it was on the same level as Shadow of Mordor, of like, hey, you're a Jedi and do whatever you want in this super cool area.
That's true. I think one of the downsides of Knights of the Old Republic was like, hey, do this thing. Now you're evil, even though that kind of wasn't an evil thing to do.
Yeah, and the combat in KOTOR, I'm not crazy about. Like, it's pretty boring to look at.
Ooh, and strong it's, words.
This is my opinion.
You don't
opinion.
Like seeing the same animation of a lightsaber duel over and over again?
And waiting for your blaster to
And just to see
recharge.
A number, like, you're having a lightsaber duel, which really is like, a lightsaber, I feel like, is pass or fail. You hit somebody with a lightsaber once, the end. And then the
not
lightsaber
35.
Do not pass go.
Yeah, it's like, oh, 35 from this lightsaber duel. Really? So that, I mean, that also annoyed me in Attack of the Clones with, like, the Dooku just kind of like taps Obi-Wan. He's like, ow, my arm. It's like, no, your arm's gone. Put a lightsaber in the arm.
These aren't real budget cuts. The budget isn't that
high. Maybe Dooku is just so skilled with a saber that he's like, I don't want to cut your arm off. But then Anakin like pisses him off. He's like, man, fuck you, Anakin. Shut that.
Wow. That's my pick.
Anywho.
I would go with the Chronicles of Narnia. I think Narnia has an amazing open world. You've got the real world. You've got the world of Narnia. You have a whole cast of characters, armies, villains.
Do they do stuff in the real world?
They do. I mean, there's not a whole lot. But
World War II?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they do find their way back to Narnia and things have changed. I mean, there's definitely a lot of opportunity with that.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, that there's talking animals, for goodness sake. I mean, I just think there's... Yeah.
What's the mouse's name?
Tutmos, Mr. Tutmos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be really cool because there's just so much.
Would you play as the kids or as Prince Caspian?
I think, I don't know.
You could
play as all of them.
Yeah.
It could be like a Resident Evil kind of thing where you play as all the different characters.
Oh. Yeah, I think that would, you know, that would...
Be sweet.
Yeah.
I already went. I said Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
The whip.
So I was actually sitting here just like rolling a couple ideas around in my head. Like I thought it would be really cool to get like a Harry Potter game that didn't suck, or
why haven't
maybe
they done
I know.
Open world Harry Potter?
And
good
I've played them, but
they
suck.
Did a Kinect one, which was stupid.
And I was thinking Wonder Woman, but no, I think I've settled something. The Hunger Games, like the earlier Hunger Games, where
Holy
the Hunger
smokes.
Games wasn't taken down yet. It's like if they could do that with some of the really early ones where only one will survive.
So you would be a tribute.
It would be a fight.
Well, yes. You could start with Haymitch. I mean, you could really just go back and start with some of the early victors. And that's
wouldn't that be interesting if you knew?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That'd be interesting if you did one where you knew who the victor was and you don't play them. That would be
like
you are destined for failure.
But yeah,
what
I mean,
do you do?
Because every year the arena changes and all of the things. Yeah,
can they do this in time for Mockingjay?
So
part
far,
two
get
or
on it, WB.
Before everybody gets disappointed by Mockingjay.
Hey,
part one,
watch
part
it.
Two.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh
no.
Yeah, that's right. God damn it, they're doing that again.
Well, Twilight they've only made a Facebook game for it, which I think tells you where
let's go.
Where their heads at.
Honestly, I don't mind the movie mix. Split into two because I feel like with the second Hunger Games movie, there was so much unexplained and so much rush that if you didn't read the book, you were really left lacking. I think there was enough material there to make two movies out of it.
And there are a couple of huge moments in the last one where it's like if they don't do this right, they're going to ruin the entire series.
Yeah.
So.
And there were a lot. I enjoyed it, but I had read the book so I could read between the lines. But I think that, yeah.
Single tear of sadness.
So there you go. Those are our answers. Why don't you tell us in the comments what your what franchise you would like to see made into a AAA awesome super duper game? Say it in the comments, and you might just win a thing.
A whole thing.
All right, so we're at the end of the episode. Time just to tell you guys to be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. You can keep up on all the cool things we post. Same with reviewing this on iTunes. Subscribe to this on iTunes. And I guess that's about it. And until next time, Radio Radar out!